First of all, Joe, before we get to anybody else, I want to discuss the turnaround at St. Joe's. I saw the talent last year that he had, the young talent that Phil Martelli had, and I felt, and I told Dick Girardi this, I said, Dick, I think he has something. To see the turnaround from minus 20 in the loss column to now just about 20 in the win column, what have you seen this year that's really been encouraging about St. Joe's basketball?
Well, I think we started to see it at the end of last season, Steve. The team was 0-8 in the first half of Atlantic 10 play a year ago on merit, or lack of it, and then 4-4 in the back end of the schedule, and then won three elimination games through the A-10 tournament, finally losing in overtime to Dayton in the league semifinals. So there was certainly optimism. And then this year, you know, very up and down for long stretches, and even within games, I think, A, because of youth, but even more so, kind of the lack of a true point guard. So sometimes it can get a little rudderless out there, but the athleticism and the skill level of the Hawks is certainly as high as it's been, you know, in a long, long time. And I appreciate your asking.
And the next part is, I watched the game against Temple the other night. I was just impressed as to how they attacked that game, and that it's great for St. Joe's within the framework of the Big Five in the city to get the Villanovas and the Temples in their own building.
I think it has come to that. You know, I'm still a Philly Hoops and Palestra purist. I would love to see all the Big Five games at the Palestra. You know, in our four-year series with you guys, you've gotten, I guess, one at each place now. But, you know, if the other schools, for their own legitimate reasons, and I'm not speaking ill of Temple and Villanova, I get and respect what they're doing, because it's all about now building a profile to get in the NCAA tournament. And given that, you know, if they're playing you at their house when it's your turn, you really can't give up the home court advantage. And the Hawks have been doing that for years. And if somehow they end up sneaking into the tournament this year, and it's because of beating Villanova and Temple, well, maybe that will have turned out to be a pretty good decision.
Where does the program that you work for stand in your bracketology right now? How far out are they?
Three spots. Team number 71 on the board at this moment. With the proviso that, of course, much can and will change over the next, you know, dozen days leading up to and through Selection Sunday, and that the bubble tends to shrink a bit as we get down toward crunch time because of upsets, you know, here, there, and everywhere in conference tournaments. On average, and I wrote this earlier in the week, on average, 2.1 bid thieves a year from conference tournaments. And over the last 10 years, that's come out to anywhere between 1 and 4 in a given season. So not only do you want to get on the right side of the bubble now with a week and a half to go, you want to get a couple spots beyond that to feel comfortable. And certainly the Hawks are in no position to feel comfortable, nor are any other teams in that situation. But taking the longer view, as you say, to go from back-to-back 20-loss seasons to, at worst, it appears, an NIT home game, that is feeling pretty good, or should feel pretty good, to fans at St. Joseph's.
Now, it should be pointed out that when people look at bracketology with you, when you put out last four in, first four out, it is on that date. This is not you projecting the tournament. It would be if the announcement were today.
Correct.
And I think people have to understand that when they read it.
Yeah, and it's really the only way you can do it and follow all the principles and procedures of seeding and bracketing that the actual committee undertakes. Obviously, I have opinions. You know, one might have an opinion, let's say, that after scraping by in-state college last week in Northwestern, the current last team in, number 68, or, if you will, more accurately, number 37 in the at-large pool, out of 37, that, you know, they could lose at home Wednesday night to Ohio State. They could certainly lose at Iowa to close the regular season. And then at 6 and 10, they likely would not be in our projected field at that point. So because projecting involves more than just one team, but every team that that team plays, the only logical way to go about it is to take a snapshot from a moment in time.
What makes Northwestern, to you, that last team in? Because I've obviously had a chance to see several schools in person. I find them to be an interesting case.
Yeah, and I've seen them quite a bit myself, Steve. You know, the game on Saturday, for one, but we St. Joseph's, in a tournament with them down in Charleston back in November, and I saw them against the Tulsa, and I saw them against Seton Hall. And I thought, you know, in Sherna and Crawford in particular, they have a couple high-level guys, you know, who certainly passed the quote-unquote eye test. And as a team, you know, they played a terrific schedule. They have beaten Michigan State. They did beat Seton Hall, another likely tournament team on a neutral floor. And they've sure been in a number of other games against NCAA-level teams. I still think they're probably one scalp short of being in the field, but they're going to get those opportunities starting tomorrow night against Ohio State. That would give them both Ohio State and Michigan State as not just marquee wins, but super marquee wins. And I think if that were to happen, they would end up seeing their name in the field for the first time in what, forever.
In forever. Never
Literally.
Been in the tournament before. And
Literally.
I agree with you. I test Crawford, Scherner. They pass it. And again, the Michigan State win is a big one in their column, and they now have at least put themselves in the conversation and have opportunities to enhance it. South Florida, saw them in person early, but Anthony Collins was not a part of the mix when I saw them. You have them in the neighborhood with 10 Big East wins, right?
Yeah, they're team number 70 right now, just ahead of the Hawks. And two back of Northwestern. And when I look at South Florida, 11-5 now in the Big East, I see a team that has really taken advantage of kind of a quirky bit of unbalanced scheduling in the Big East. Their two repeat opponents this year happen to be Pitt and Villanova, which normally would say, hey, here's a chance to four times get a scalp or two that are really going to get, you know, the committee's attention. Well, the good news is they went 4-0 against Pitt and Villanova, and the bad news is they went 4-0 against Pitt and Villanova.
Exactly.
Because while those games aren't necessarily hurting their chances, they're also not really helping them at this point. Somehow they've gotten to 11-5 in that league, Steve, and they've only beaten one Big East team thus far with a winning record. And that was Cincinnati just this past Sunday down at USF. And Cincinnati, because of its incredibly poor non-conference schedule strength, is still an anchor to teams that beat them because their RPI is in the 70s. So to me, South Florida with, you know, almost a must game against Louisville here tomorrow night and or West Virginia in the conference regular season finale at home, because we could be looking at the first 12-win Big East team to miss the field if they don't put, you know, another scalp or two on their resume. Because if the ultimate criteria is who in the field did you beat, it's a short list. Right now it's Seton Hall in a game won in the 40s at home. And
How
Seton
difficult.
Hall is 8-9 in the league.
Right, exactly. They're 8-9 in the league. For you, I think for the fan, they can look at a team that is in a BCS conference, and they can get a gauge. Well, they beat them, they lost to them. Give us an idea. If you've been brilliant over the years, Joe, of putting mid-majors into the tournament and seeding them properly on top of that. Give us an idea of the difficulty it is for you to judge their worthiness and their seedability, because it is a mid-major and they do have to play their conference schedule.
Yeah, it's not apples and apples. That's what makes it difficult. And it's not just difficult for me. It's very difficult for the real people who are charged with doing the actual work. And I respect what they do probably more than most people think, because I mimic what they do every day for about 4.5 months. And when you live it, you know, you start to breathe it and feel it. And I would say this to you. It's easier if and when those quote-unquote mid-majors have played really good non-conference opponents, because then you can get more of a closer to an apples-to-apples comparison. you know, a more difficult example would be this year's Drexel team, which has a non-conference strength of schedule in the 240s, I think, the last time I checked. Its best win, the Dragons, is over VCU, a team in their own league, you know, which has a similar gaudy win-loss record but a spotty schedule. And, you know, Drexel hasn't lost since January the 4th. And they've been getting better and better and better as they go.
So I watched them the other night, Joe. I watched them the other night, Joe, and they absolutely passed the eyeball test. I know that.
Well, I've seen them at least a half dozen times live. And I also called their game, a CAA TV game against VCU,
right?
In which they did what good Drexel teams do, which is grind the other team down with defense, rebounding, and toughness. Now, what they've got this year that most Bruiser Flint teams have not had over the years is they've got some guys who can also shoot. And I'm here to break news to you, you know, that the game's a whole lot easier, you know, when you put the ball in the basket.
Hold on one second. Hold on one second. Let me write that down.
Yeah, exactly.
I've done this I've done basketball for 30 years here at Penn State. I'm trying to see.
There you
okay,
go.
Okay, good. Got it.
And let's face it. We've all had teams that we've been announcers for where, you know, you go to practice and you feel like you got to wear a helmet. You know,
you're
because
right.
The ball's just flying off the rim in every direction. I've had it. You've had it. And
yeah.
Then sometimes, you know, you get – you know, some of the guys that you've had in recent years, or we get a Pat Carroll and the ball always goes in. But
right.
I mean, or at least it looks like it's gonna. And I would say this. I do think the committee is making more and more qualitative judgments as opposed to quantitative judgments in recent years in evaluating these, you know, middling majors, I'll say, teams with losing records in the big boy leagues. Against, you know, the 25-5 CAA team. I think that's how VCU got in the tournament last year, and I would hope that they're consistent in applying those same kinds of evaluations to Drexel and VCU this year, because to my eyes, and I'm typically one who's opposed to the eye test, but to my eyes, they're both very good and worthy. Now, will the bubble shrink, and will they get squeezed that way without anything of their own doing? It's certainly possible. And you and I have both been on the, you know, first four out list in recent years. So we
right.
know how that feels, and it could happen to them again. But they're both pretty good for different reasons. I happen to think Drexel has a better chance to win in the tournament because it's a more unfamiliar style. And, you know, they're going to get you to dance to their tune, and it's going to be 55-55 with 4 minutes to go.
Yeah. Certain ones are easy. For example, if Murray State does not win the Ohio Valley, they'll get in.
Correct.
And what will happen is they'll knock out somebody else off the bubble.
And
those are the easy ones.
Right. Yeah, so like Tennessee State or Austin Peay or Morehead State or whomever, and becomes one of those 21 bid thieves that we've seen in the last 10 years. That's where the average comes from. Or it could be, you know, like the Jerry McNamara year with Syracuse, where they weren't going, but then won, you know, 4 games in 4 days to steal a bid from who knows who it was that year.
Right, exactly. They won 4 and 4, and they got in, and they were going to go to the NIT. That's where they were going before they made the run at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, they won 2 1-point games, an overtime game. And then in the Big East Championship game, they had a real breather. They only won by 3 against Pitt.
Yeah, and they coasted home.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly right. Give us an idea for you. You're calling games. Give me your pulse on what's going on with the pulse of college basketball. What will the next week and a half be like you for you leading up to Selection Sunday as you continue to break it down?
Well, I should first credit Mrs. Brackett's as well as my employer, because I do have a real job outside of basketball, for being reasonably indulgent for the next couple of weeks, because you're right, it is. And I mostly just take days off. There'd be no other way to do it. But as an example, I just pulled into the Charlotte airport, did an ESPNU expert show all morning. In fact, it's re-airing right now, so I'm really not omnipresent. It's just videotaped. flying to Buffalo, because any sane person in February wants to leave 75-degree Charlotte and go to Buffalo.
Well done, Joe.
Yeah, not good planning by me. The Hawks' regular season finale at St. Bonaventure tomorrow night, which is, you know, an hour and a half drive when it's not snowing, from Buffalo to Olean. And that game is for a bye in the Atlantic 10 tournament. And then back to campus for a couple days of my real job. And then sometime Friday night or Saturday up to Bristol. And I'll be on every show they ask me to be on, while also updating regularly on .com. And I'll just commute to wherever St. Joseph's is in the Atlantic 10 tournament, be it, you know, a home court early round game, or straight to Atlantic City a week from Friday. My schedule toward the end of all this is really dependent on the Hawks. And many have said to me, Steve, the last couple of years, oh, my gosh, Joe, you've gotten so much more airtime. That must be great. Well, it is. It is. But it's also because my Hawks haven't been playing.
Right.
So it's been available days to do it. The better the Hawks are, the less I'm on, and selfishly, the less money I make. And I'm all ready to make that trade again for the next few years if it means postseason play.
Exactly. I know exactly how you feel about
that. We both do the same. We both make the same choice, right?
We both make the same choice every single time. Every time.
There's nothing like postseason play, you know, for the team that you're with, because there's just an energy and an excitement. You know, I was thrilled for your NIT run a couple years ago, because, you know, that starts to build too, particularly if you're not a team, you know, that's always in the Sweet 16 or always in the top, you know, 25 in the rankings. Like, winning is good, and it begets more winning. And we've been on both sides of it, and I certainly prefer Burger A.
Yeah, exactly right. Give us just a quick idea, Joe, before I let you go, about the depth of the Atlantic 10 this year, because that is a mid-major conference that has made its mark, has done well over time. Give us an idea of the depth, the quality depth of the conference this year.
Certainly Temple is the cream of the crop right now, a legitimate Sweet 16 in my eyes, not at all diminished with their loss at Hagen Arena and St. Joseph's the other night. I'm not sure many teams that would have won in that environment. You witnessed it, and it's quite an advantage, as Creighton and Dayton and Villanova and Drexel, other really good teams, have also learned this year. I think St. Louis is the next best team in terms of NCAA tournament prospects. Xavier absolutely has the next most amount of talent, but, you know, their kind of saga of the year since the brawl with Cincinnati has been well chronicled, and frankly, to me, they're just broken. They're just not, the pieces aren't fitting together to make a whole. But they go to St. Louis tonight in a game to kind of save their season, and I'll be very interested to see how that plays out. And I'm hoping against hope, you know, that they still have cable in Buffalo and I'm able to find that game at 9 o'clock somewhere. And then, you know, after those three, you've got kind of a mishmash of St. Bonaventure and St. Joe's and Dayton and UMass, and to a lesser extent LaSalle, teams that have posted some nice wins throughout the year. I hope I'm not being a homer and saying I think the Hawks are the best and most talented team of that group. But they've also lost some games within that group. So, you know, the neutral court in Atlantic City will determine all that. I think ultimately the league will get three bids, with maybe two or three more in the NIT.
Joe, always an absolute pleasure. You know that. And get that flight to Buffalo, because I know they're waiting for you with open arms.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, I'm passing here and I'm looking at guys coming off planes with golf clubs, and it's making me very cranky.
I can understand that. And you're getting on the plane with
skis.
People
always ask me, you know, what does Joe Lenardi do on Selection Monday when it's all over? And the answer is, I head to the driving range. And I'm fine with that.
You're fine with that. Slice or hook?
Yes.
Both.
I'm ambidextrous.
Yeah.
but I hope it's a week later this year, because I hope somewhere to go with SJU.
Yeah. And you guys deserve to be someplace along the way, because Phil has done a great job with the program. And you know what? Next year they're going to be really, really good.
Yeah, I think you might be right.